Welcome to the Maris Review. I have a very special guest today. Patricia Lockwood was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and raised in all the worst cities of the Midwest. She's the author of two poetry collections and the memoir Priest Daddy. She's a contributing editor at the London Review of Books, and her new novel is called No One Is Talking About This. And the first thing I have to say is that my favorite tweet of hers is from 2013, when she added the Paris Review and said, "So is Paris any good or not?" Hi.
Hi, thank you. That was quite a mouthful. Yes, and I have been told that it is the dream of your life for me to ask you.
Yes.
Is Maris any good or not?
I mean, hell yeah.
It would never even occur to me to ask because the answer is so obvious. It's so clear that Maris is good that it wouldn't even occur to me. Paris, though, I've heard that it reeks. sometimes the rap is not great. There was that parkour thing where everyone was jumping off the side of buildings for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Although that seems kind of fun. And we really talked about it for a while. It was one of those like meme things that had a much longer shelf life than anything that's happening now. Parkour lasted like a year and a half, 2 years.
I mean, and you'd think people would be more into it now because like we're just kind of bouncing off buildings.
That is exactly what we're actually doing in this new life. We live in the city of the mind, playing parkour in the city of the mind. That's right.
Oh my gosh.
So I've fulfilled my podcast duty by asking that question. Maybe one day I'll delete it and just replace it with the variant. I'm going to call it the variant. The tweet variant is Maris any good or not?
Oh,
you know, there is an interesting thing about this tweet, which is like it is induced a sort of mass delusion surrounding it, sort of in the same way that people have surrounding like famous lines in Casablanca and things like that, like "Here's looking at you, kid," and they never actually said them. So a lot of people actually think that the tweet is, "So how's Paris?" I would fucking never. That would not be how I would phrase it. It's got to be clumsy. It's got to be clunky and have that nod at the end. I'm a 90s kid.
That's and no punctuation, of course, like that.
Absolutely no punctuation except for the dot at the beginning that allows the Paris Review to see it.
Hey, it's Maris. Great children's books open up a new world for discovery. With Literati Kids, your child can explore uncharted places every month with spellbinding stories handpicked by experts. Literati Kids is a try before you buy subscription book club. Each month, Literati delivers 5 vibrantly illustrated children's books, bringing the immersive magic of reading to your home. Literati's age-based book clubs ensure appropriate readings for your budding bookworm, whether they're snuggling with you for your story time or letting their imaginations roam free. Each book bundle is thoughtfully tailored by education experts with 5 stories meant to spark new interest and nurture a healthy curiosity. Head to literati.com/Maris for 25% off your first 2 orders. Select your child's book club and start them on a literary journey like no other. Literati.com/Maris, M-A-R-I-S, is the only place to find 25% off your first 2 orders of this one-of-a-kind book subscription, the most joyful way to foster a lifelong love of reading and learning. That's literati.com/Maris.
Trisha, tell me about writing a book for people with our kinds of brains who like know how to compose this snarky but silly tweet to the Paris Review. I read that your editor is not very online.
So tell me about online.
Like downloading all of that into his brain.
He's literally William T. Volman's editor. Also, the dude is not online. He's like, "Yeah, I'll give Bill some notes and I'll give him some cuts. And then he'll come back to me with a draft that's 200 pages longer." So what we're talking about is latitude. I get latitude from this man because he's like, "Well, it's not Bill Volman. She's not going to come back at me with 100, 200 more pages. You know, she's probably going to listen to what I say." But to answer your percipient question, how big does your brain feel?
Both the size of a galaxy and the size of one of the peas that gets put in the guacamole.
Exactly. Oh, that was so good. That was so perfect. You nailed it. And there's like some, military helicopter flying above us, surveilling us at this moment in time. Yeah, that's what I would say. Mine is like a grain of sand. And it's also the enormous lens that God is using to fry us through. So I did my own metaphor and it was a little bit different, but I think that it was equally as good. Yeah, it feels very, very tiny. Very, very big. And I like to write about really tiny and big things at the same time. I like to give people a very vertiginous whiplash and looking from the small thing to the big thing. That's always sort of been my style. It's been my mode. It's been my beat. It's what I like to do. But yeah, I mean, writing a book about the internet, wow, that's a tall order, isn't it? And it's funny too, because Lauren's book came out, I think, just 2 weeks before mine. And it's really interesting because the whole idea is like, well, when there's one book about the internet, there's got to be two. And that's where we come in. And it's very funny because obviously the books are quite different. And to look at them on this comparative plane, I think is kind of insane. It has been like a little bit hilarious to watch in action. How has that been for you as a book reviewer to see a book evaluator?
It's really interesting because, well, you have that a little fragment in the book about, did you see the piece?
Yeah.
The piece. And there are so many pieces about what it means for you and for Lauren to be writing about the internet.
Oh my God, can you believe it?
What is going on? And I like that your narrator in the novel is considering this question too. Like, you do it like Jane Austen.
Yes, very much like Jane Austen. And she's also considering the fragment. She is asking why we're all writing like this now. And a lot of people have asked me about the form. And it's like, I mean, I think you have to write it in fragments. You have to use the language and the structure and the form of the portal so that it feels like people are slipping through those little panes of glass, like these little rectangles, like we're doing, and you can just keep doing it eternally is how it feels. I don't think that you can do that in a block of text that also includes, you know, these moments where she gets up and like goes to the refrigerator. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to rely on the reader a little bit to make the connections. But I also, for a long time, you know, made jokes about autofiction in it. And I haven't really been asked about autofiction that much at all. It's like people forgot the word when they started talking to me and they're like, so this book is very semi-autobiographical, and I'm like, there's a new word for this that everyone's obsessed with. Why not use that?
Well, so this brings me to, I wrote down a tweet that you did yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read it to you now.
I'm glad that you wrote it down because I probably don't remember it, to be honest.
You wrote, one feature of new writing, and I think what some people fear, is that a fourth wall has been broken. We know more about writers, about the circumstances around surrounding their books. People's diaries do stream around us. The real does bleed into everything. Yeah, that sounds like more than autofiction.
Yeah, it totally does. I mean, you can go back. I've said in a couple other interviews, I'm like, you can go back to, you know, the day or the day before my niece died, and you can see me tweet the line dissociating in a first watch because I was there. That is what was happening. No one knew the circumstances surrounding it, but that is what was going on. But I like that complication. I like all of those things bleeding in. I like people knowing certain things about me that they might attribute to the protagonist. I like working in dangerous forms, and I always have. So it's not, that sort of thing is not an issue for me. And I also like, as I've again expressed in other interviews, I don't really care that much about genre. So it's not a thing where I feel so protective of my work that people can't attribute autobiographical elements to it. And maybe it's because I'm fucking old at this point. You know, I'm not like 23 years old straight out of college writing about my murder crew that's learning Latin under the, you know, aegis of a dangerous teacher. And there's some guy in white flannels, you know, having bacchanalias with me in the woods. It's not like that. I know, right? I should have written that book. I would have if I had gone to college. I would have done those things if I had gone to college. But as it is, I had to wait till I was like 38 years old, right? And be like, yeah, I'm going to put everything in this. I'm going to do whatever I want.
I've had a few authors on the show who also write about themselves.
Quote unquote.
Quote unquote. Jinx. And then it becomes this weird conversational tick thing where mm-hmm. I have to say, like, when you said that, or yeah. like when you're protagonist.
I know, which is a mouthful. You. It's like a mouthful of Tinker Toys, right? Yeah. But most people have been really good about it. They're like the narrator. That was cool because I was like, I actually forgot that word. I could have been using that word the whole time. I've been saying protagonist, which is very clumsy. Narrator, that's perfect. Yeah, most people have held to that. And I've been the one who is like, oh, that's true. That happened to me. I lied about this though, and I brought this in here and I switched this around because I'm very open. It hopefully is one of my more charming qualities. But if you ask me a question about it, I'll be like, yeah, that's true as hell. No, that's fake. Fiction, you can do anything.
I mean, and yeah, this is of course your first fictional work that you've put out into the world.
I love it. I love that hesitation. And my next one is going to be Middlemarch, and there's not going to be a single crumb of my own experience. It's going to take place in a village, and it's going to assume the eagle's eye view, and the eagle is going to fly into everyone's minds at once, and it's going to be perfect. It will be the work of the age.
I cannot wait, and I know you could do it.
Yeah, it sounds right. No, I could not, Maris. I absolutely could not do that. That's why I wrote my novel in fragments.
I mean, I do think when I was thinking about reading in fragments, and we were talking about this before I pressed record, it is harder for many people to read during COVID.
Yeah.
And your narrator asks, you know, are we only able to think in fragments now? And yeah. It seems more and more and more like that's the case.
I think it probably does do something to the attention span. I think that that's probably correct. I know that I do better with my writing when I don't look at it first thing in the morning. I know that I do better when I don't have, say, like an essay dropping that day and have to be very vigilant about what people are saying about me and my beautiful work online. Like, oh my God, matter of life and death. I do a lot better when my attention is not absorbed by those things. And I think that there's something just very, very enormous. It's like this, you know, this globe or this black sun has descended through people's ceilings and it's taking up a lot of their attention. It's the thing that they're looking at. But yeah, so I had COVID in March and I was like, well, can I not read because I'm locked in my house all the time or because I had COVID? And I'm like, well, I think it's got to be COVID because I've always been locked in my house. And I never go outside to play parkour, which is the thing that healthy people do.
Oh my goodness. And so tell me a little bit about COVID and how you're doing now.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot better. I did have a relapse at the beginning of my promotional cycle, which I should have seen coming. I had to do a photo shoot for The Guardian, where I had to crouch outside in the bushes for like 2 hours in 30 degree weather. And I got home and I could not stop shaking for 2 hours. And I was like, oh crap, I shouldn't have done that. But that's the only safe way to do it. You know, I had to not be wearing a mask. I had to be crouching in these bushes in this 30 degree weather. And I got home and I was like, I don't feel very good. Yeah, and you just sort of like crawl into a hot bath for 2 hours, or I would if I could still take baths. I can't because I've developed this crazy heart issue. And if I take a bath, my heart rate goes like to 160 or something.
No.
So all of these avenues of relaxation are currently closed to me. So yeah, you can say in the aftermath of COVID, I have become more psychic. I have developed witch hands. I can no longer take a hot bath. This is what I tell my doctor and I wonder why I can't get any help, right? I'm like, these are the symptoms, pay attention.
But you did another tweet that you very recently did was you do have your weighted blanket. That's your...
Oh my God. And I decided, I was like, anxiety, what if I tried this? And it was true that after I had COVID, I felt great for a couple weeks. I was almost euphoric. I had a lot of neurological symptoms while I was in the active phase of the illness, and things seemed very hyper real. I was sort of semi-delirious and actually delirious at times. And yeah, we talked about it. Like if I watched a movie or something, it was like I was walking among the people. I suddenly had this tremendously inflated sense of the fictional, sense of the narrative, which I had never had before, hence my novel in fragments. But suddenly I had this and I was like, oh, I understand. understand how stories work. You go to the next room and you do something in there. That is how a story works. So all this was happening during the active phase, but after it was over, I was like, oh, thank God, I made it. I'm absolutely normal. And I had a period of a couple weeks of absolute total euphoria, which probably looking back was also, you didn't want to be having that. You didn't want to be euphoric after your COVID. And then I developed the craziness. And I decided that my floorboards were squeaking too much and they were going to fall through, et cetera, et cetera. So what happened is basically that like any sort of latent mental illness type thing, like for me, it was OCD, just came back like tenfold, really crazily. And it didn't seem like there was anything I could do about it. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get this fucking blanket that's as heavy as an elephant, and I'm going to pull it up over me in the night and see what that does. And I cannot tell. I did tweet about it. I'm like, I cannot tell whether I am relaxing or whether I am just fighting the blanket so hard in the middle of the night that I am exhausted and at some point just drop off to sleep. So it could go either way. Have you used one?
Yes. And I do feel very similarly. Like it doesn't automatically feel like a hug.
No, I mean, a hug from a bear. Yeah. But like, is it helping us? I have no idea. And then my husband really hates it because it's basically like a chastity belt.
Yeah.
If you put it over yourself, they can't get to you. Mm-hmm. And they hate it so much. He's like, well, good night, I guess.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's very tough to be locked in my chastity blanket at night fighting the bear. Yeah.
So I was very lucky to have gotten a galley of this book.
You were very lucky.
Yes, I was. That's the end. That's
very lucky, Maris. Yes.
That was just a brag, a galley brag, hashtag. But I got to read it without knowing where you were going to take me.
Yes.
And now I think, I mean, I've just seen the stuff that's already been written about the book.
Yeah.
Readers have more of an idea of what they're in for.
Yes, that is correct. And I think that I was okay with that because a big chunk of the second half ran in the New Yorker. So I was like, well, Cat's sort of out of the bag there. So it's fine. But it was also true that when we were writing my... the book flap copy, it originally did mention the sort of turn that the second part of the book took. And I was like, well, what if we just took that out? I mean, it seems like we could do that. But there's also something to be said for readers having more information. You know, some people, of course, will find the material distressing. And you want to be aware of that, too, while at the same time realizing that it's not really your job as an author to be like trigger warning for every single thing that happens in my book. You can leave that to some of the other readers. So I think that there is a balance, but yeah, it's okay with me because some of the material was out there already. But I do wonder, I mean, there are going to be people who read it without knowing much going in. How did that feel for you? Did you feel blindsided by it?
I mean, yes, but in a really excellent way.
Yeah. People have asked me about the form, you know, why I made this choice. And again, having talked about it in such semi-autobiographical terms, I was like, it was necessary to do it this way because this is how a situation like this erupts into your real life. You experience it as an absolute break. You look up from scrolling and you know, you see this situation, you see members of your family, you see a brand new human life. And it had to be preserved in that way, I think.
And then the impulse, though, is still there to think, like, what can I post about this?
Or like, yeah, absolutely. And in my real life situation, I didn't post much at all because, you know, my niece was not my daughter. And you want to be respectful. And it's been interesting because there was a piece that recently ran in the New York Times book section about it, where they did interview my sister. And part of that was because we had this very emotional interview where I think both of us felt that we were being very inarticulate, you know, and I'm like, I'm sorry that I'm not speaking about this well. And she's like, I'm sorry that I'm not speaking about this well. And so I thought, well, what if we just sort of broke down this barrier and talked more about the real thing, talked more about what really happened? And I said, I think that part of the difficulty I'm experiencing is that at some point, if we were in person, if we were together, I would show you her picture on my phone. And so I just went ahead and did that. And so we kind of took the interview onto a different plane. And I told her that she could contact my sister after asking my sister for permission first. But what I didn't think about was the fact that when it comes to my real sister, when it came to my real niece, it was always true that my sister took her into the world, that it was a huge part of the project of her life, right, of allowing, you know, the stimulus of the world to pour into her, that she took her outside, that she made sure that she could see and touch everything. And that would have been a lot harder for me just logistically. It would have been hard for me to get out of the house with a bunch of machines, oxygen tanks, things like that. And so she was so happy to talk to her. I think that she in a way wants to talk about her all the time, you know, she doesn't want people to forget. So it was very lovely that we were able to do that. It calls up the fact that you are different, that if it had happened to me, I don't know what I would have done, but there is that instinct. There's this impulse. Can I put this in the portal? Both the beautiful aspect of it, right, the picture of the child, and also draw attention to it. Like, I cannot believe there are these laws standing in the way. I cannot believe that my sister's life is in danger because she lives in fucking Ohio. All of these other things you want to bring attention to, your mind first looks, it first turns to the portal.
Yeah. And I guess for listeners who haven't read anything about you yet, the portal is just the wider internet.
It's the fucking internet, bitch. And it's Twitter too. It's the internet, bitch.
But also, I saw that New York Times piece and I saw the photo on your phone.
Yeah, and she said that to me. She was like, thank you for sending me this. And it occurred to me that the photographer, when she comes to take a picture of you, could take a picture of your phone. She could do that. And I asked my sister and I said, I think that would be really beautiful. Yeah. And again, it is because I'm not trying to preserve a turn. You know, this is not like House of Leaves or The Moonstone or something like that. You know, this is a book where we're sort of hinting about the fact that the second half is about a very urgent human situation. Right. But yeah, that was her idea. And I thought that was really beautiful. And it felt very collaborative. It felt like we were getting finally to have that real conversation that we had been very much longing to have.
Yeah. And I mean, I love the details in the book about the stimuli that the baby enjoyed.
Right. Right. Because you are looking, and in our personal situation, the doctors were very brutal in what they told us about my niece. It was basically, she won't react to anything. She won't be able to learn anything. She won't be able to recognize her name. She won't be able to feed herself. She won't know who you are. They said things like that, the most brutal possible things that they can tell you. And it's at that point that you really do wonder, you know, what is a human being? Like, what constitutes a human soul, a human life? Like, what rises to that level? And in reality, you know, she opened up like a flower. She was able to do all of these things that we had no idea that she was going to be able to do. And it was just so incredibly beautiful to watch. And you wanted to be absolutely tuned to that. You didn't want to be looking at anything else. You didn't want to be thinking about anything else. You only wanted to pour the things of the world into her portals. You know, you could do that. She could hear. We didn't know that was going to be true, but she could hear. And she responded absolutely to music. If you sang to her, she would sing notes back to you. And it was absolutely, it wasn't just a holy experience, but it was very interesting. And I had written a little bit in the book in the first part and starting on the second part that, you know, at the same time that everything that was happening over the past 4 years and much farther back, of course, felt so urgent, there was a part of you that just wanted to run up to the rooftop and watch the fireworks and say, this is incredibly interesting. And this is because you're a human being, yeah, you know, and you are witnessing the world. You're witnessing your own time, no matter what's happening in it. And there was something like that that was true of the baby as well. You understood that it was absolutely urgent, that it was even dire. And a part of you was watching the lights.
and enjoying 98 degrees.
Yes, I know. And I really, there has always been a part of me that doesn't want to bring 98 degrees into my work, you know, doesn't want to mention these frivolous details, doesn't want to turn on the radio and listen to the songs of the day. But it felt so important to do that. It's so grounding to do that. And it's so human. And it ties us to our time, a time that you don't always want to belong to. And then you just have that moment, you know, where you're standing stock still at the center of the turning world and 98 degrees is playing.
I often hear of modern writers saying, oh, I don't want to write about the internet because I want my work to be timeless.
Right. Like, yeah.
And it's like, but what if you have captured just an exact moment in time completely?
Right. And that's what I came to. And I forced myself to do it. I forced myself to write about the internet because I am the biggest bitch of all that kind of person. I am absolutely the one who's like, I'm Sappho and they're going to be reconstructing my fragments in 5,000 years. I have always been that way. I hate it about myself. And so I have to sit myself down and be like, bitch, you are going to talk about McDonald's. You are going to, you know, mention the Folgers incest commercial. You are going to sit down and pay attention to your time because you are alive now.
Yes.
You know, you may not have had a choice over when you were born. You might not have chosen this time, but this is what you get. You better fucking look around. So yeah, that's if the book does seem actually aggressive in its observations of those things at times, that's why. It's me, that is my own aggression turned on myself saying, look at this.
Tell me about quote unquote the internet novel and what makes it so.
Baby girl, that is such a big one. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there have actually been that many of them. And, you know, like people like Darcy Wilder have written about the internet wonderfully, I think. Megan Boyle, we've had Atessa. A lot of people have brought up My Year of Rest and Relaxation, which is not exactly an internet novel, but for some reason does seem to partake of it, right? It seems to be related. It seems to be associated or to exist.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
Maybe in the world that gives birth to the current timeline. Mm-hmm. I think maybe that's what it is. I think it's the root of the current timeline. And that's why people bring that up a lot. But yeah, it's so I had to do something that felt almost as if it could be taking place in the portal, but were not things that you would actually tweet. Because yeah, some part of me is still like, no, that is a waste if I tweet that. I am going to put that in my book because I still believe in paper. I still believe in the fucking trees, right? So I was having these observations that were almost things you could put online, but were things I was going to put on paper instead.
Wow, the discipline.
I know. I am so truly disciplined, and this is what people always mention when they talk about me. Number one thing is my discipline. That's the first.
Trisha, before we go, I'd love to hear about what you have been reading lately that you'd like to recommend.
Yes. So I know I read the prep and I was like, wait, I've never read a book in my life. I don't know what a book is. And then I was like, no, there's a stack of them over there. I'm just going to turn and read what we have. Okay. So Marshlands is a big one. And this was just reissued by the New York Review of Books. Why am I suddenly unsure of the pronunciation of Andre Gide?
I would trust your pronunciation
Gide.
More.
Okay, so this has happened to me a couple times in interviews where I'm like, I really want to talk to people about Marshlands because it's a book just like this. And basically people are telling the narrator all the time, you should put that into Marshlands. You should put that into the book that you're writing. And I keep stopping myself because I'm like, I fucking don't know how to pronounce his last name. And this is going to really out me as a person who doesn't know what she's talking about. I would absolutely recommend that, except that he was a pedophile. So if that crosses it off the list, you know, I was like, I love this book so much. And then I had the moment where I went to the Wikipedia entry and I'm like, God damn it, Andre. So that's really good, except for that part.
Okay.
Then we have Desperate Characters, Paula Fox.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I was reading a lot of background for the Ferrante novels, and that came up, and so did Elsa Morante's book. So I read Arturo's Island, and I found that very interesting. Have you read that?
I read Desperate Characters, not the.
Okay, so I might recommend Arturo's Island to you, the Elsa Morante book. And just, I would like to know what you think about it. So there's that. I have Our Sister Killjoy is over there, which is great. Absolutely fantastic. And I have Bina. It's pronounced Bina, right?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, that's, and again, that also feels to partake a little bit, right? Maybe it's the form, absolutely, yes. So yeah, that's kind of my big list of books. And then it happened, of course, halfway through the writing. I do all the reading and then I actually like write the big LRB essays. But through the writing, I was like suddenly able not to read anymore. And I was like, really? Well, I'm glad that it lasted that long anyway. But at the same time, are you fucking kidding me? How am I going to write about Faulkner for them now?
You can't write about Faulkner.
I mean, that seems so hard. But you know, I did Nabokov at the, like, when I was like still a bit sick last year, and that was so difficult, and I didn't feel like I was 100% back on form. For the Ferrante, I felt that I was back on form, but the Nabokov, that's again a nightmare. That's a nightmare that you would encounter in one of his own books, that someone has to write the Nabokov essay while they're recovering from this like neurological illness that they've experienced. Gosh. That's totally new on the planet Earth and human beings. Amazing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's pale fire for you.
That's pale fire. And I looked back, and in the initial phase of rereading some of those books, I had coronavirus actively. I looked at my notes and I was like, no fucking wonder this didn't make any sense when I was reading Ben Sinister or whatever. I was like, yeah, that's not something that anyone can do. No wonder we're just walking back and forth across that bridge over and over and over again.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I wish you nothing but health and well-being. And
perfect. Yes, I love to be healthy and full of well-being.
And you know, and internet serotonin.
Yeah, I mean, not too much, because you know, you get that syndrome. We all got it the day that Trump had coronavirus, and we were like, oops, this is going to kill us with how good we feel. But then it didn't kill us. Would that it had at that moment, and we would have like died in pure ecstasy, right?
You've solved all of our problems.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we did all die then.
It could be.
It could be. It's possible. But yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
It's been lovely. And I think that we have answered the question that you so desperately desired me to ask.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Maris Review. And check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.